Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Dory, the communications manager here at the Denver Audubon. We're an independent, nonprofit chapter of the National Audubon Society, and we believe that birds are not just beautiful, they're vital. They're messengers of ecosystem health, and when we protect them, we also nurture the well-being of our communities, the environment, and the planet. This podcast, The Curious Bird, is part of a larger effort to uplift what we call a voice of the sky, a growing community of people like you who feel called to speak up, act boldly, and care deeply for the future of Earth and all her wild beings. Our goal is to share the stories of inspired advocates and to reflect on the creativity, interconnectedness, and wonder that the natural world awakens in us. We hope these stories spark lifelong learning, deepen your sense of stewardship, and remind us all of the power of collective care. So, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, thank you. We're so glad you're here. Let's take flight together and dive into today's episode of The Curious Bird. Hello, everybody. Thank you so much for joining for another conversation that I can't wait to get into. I have with me today Noah Kaplan. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well. Yes, it's a beautiful day. I love Octobers.
It is, yes. And I have to say, I'm super excited to chat with you because I met you shortly after I started here at the Denver Audubon, and you did an event for us. You're the executive director of Compost Colorado. And we chatted a little bit before, and your energy, your passion, enthusiasm, the way you expressed environmental topics and love for the environment, I just was so excited to dive in more. So I'm really grateful that you're here with me.
That's so nice of you to say. Yes, I remember that presentation. Denver Audubon, it's a great organization, and you guys have great membership. And, you know, I really feed off of that energy in the room. So if I was feeling excited and enthusiastic, it's because I felt it from everybody else. So thanks for asking me to chat and for your work with Denver Audubon.
Thank you.
Yeah, psyched to be here.
Yeah, well, I'd love to kick it off before I introduce you a little bit more with a couple birdie questions.
Great.
And we were chatting about birds, you know, just casually, and you said they're magical creatures. And I was like, yes, they are. What is magical about them to you?
They're magical creatures because they exist all over the place in areas that we can't go, yet they seem to kind of travel kind of in complementary spaces with humans. Mm-hmm. And if you see them, you don't see them for long because they're headed elsewhere. And they just seem to have a good perspective on everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
they're viewing things from a different plane than we are. And there's something special about that. And they're visitors to places that you wouldn't otherwise see other creatures. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be in a very, very isolated location and still find that you're, you know, being accompanied by some other creature. And it's usually a bird.
Yeah.
I like that.
I love that.
Yeah.
I did notice that you have a bird tattoo as well.
I do have a bird tattoo. It's very observant. Yes, it's a big one here.
I know. Would you care to share?
Yeah, that's actually pretty great. This is, I have a common crow tattooed on my arm here, which I had a mentor at one point in time who kind of gave it to me as a spirit animal. Which, for whatever reason, felt really cool to me. I liked the idea of having an animal I was connected to that I got to see so often.
Yeah.
Like, it was great that no matter where I went, I could find one. They seem to be really common companions to people. They exist in the cities, on top of mountains, on beaches. Mm-hmm. And then you start to learn more about them, and you learn how intelligent they are and how social they are and how they pair bond, and they raise their young for many years, and they take a great deal of time and attention to educate their young and pass down knowledge through generations. I thought that was like really cool and unexpected. This one, funny enough, is a crow perched on a branch, and he's got a piece of trash or waste or something in his beak. And I got this tattoo kind of prior to any of my work with Compost Colorado,
really?
Which almost felt that it was some kind of sign of some kind. I always was drawn. I liked the idea of an animal kind of starting to clean up or tidy up the world in one way or another. An animal making use of things that were otherwise thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what it symbolizes for me. It's all the things that crows represent that we just discussed, and the added little flair, I guess, that I put into the image was this idea of this animal making use of things that others don't, which I think birds are really good at doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah. Thanks for noticing.
Yeah. I love that. And I love that you shared that story of synchronicity and almost guardianship. I find that along my journey, birds have showed up as guideposts.
Yes.
You know, and yes. Signs and messages.
Yes. There's something to see one cross your path or to see mm-hmm. one circling above you. It may be happening more often than you notice, but whenever you do notice, it seems like there's something very magical about that moment that it was meant to be, that there's something kindred
yes.
there. So, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of the profoundness of existence, that feeling of I get to be here.
Yes. There's a lot of gratitude mm-hmm. Associated with seeing one that seems like it's chosen you for mm-hmm. one reason or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. It's great. Good start.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to introduce you now, your official bio.
Great. Let's do it.
Noah Kaplan is the executive director for Compost Colorado. He was born and raised in Denver. He started his professional career as a high school speech and debate teacher before discovering a deep passion for dirt and the power that composting has to transform our future. He is proud to work every day to help his community live in better balance with the natural world. So, walk me through, what was it, you're a speech and debate teacher,
yeah,
that took you towards that love of dirt and turning that into your work?
It's so interesting. Yeah. I mean, that's obviously a couple sentences.
Yes.
Of story that's much longer. You know, you try and tie things up in a neat little bow like that. But, you know, the reality is obviously much messier than all that. To start, I was just always a kid that liked to be dirty.
Mm-hmm.
I was never afraid to be a little dirty. And that was that certainly is an asset in this business.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll see the Coco members around here all are cut from that kind of cloth.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be connected, and aren't too afraid to have a little dirt under their nails. And that was always the kind of kid I was. And I grew up knowing that I wanted to do something that was, you know, good for my community and the world. I think I got lucky to be instilled with those mm-hmm. values. My parents, you know, kind of walked in the world that way. And I knew I wanted to do that. So, and I really liked storytelling and I really liked literature and I liked those things. So I was like, I'm going to go be an English teacher. And I ended up going back to my old high school, which was East High School in Denver. Mm-hmm. So for the locals out there, they'll know that school off Colfax. And it was a really formative experience to be there. And then I came back as their speech and debate coach. And speech and debate is a really cool environment. It's a space where kids basically learn how to advocate for the things that they're passionate about. That's what they do. And it was my job to help empower them to articulate solutions and ask the right questions, to understand issues, and then do, you know, to use their words and their advocacy as a form of action. And to do it in a competitive setting, which was always fun, mm-hmm. right? You would go and you'd compete in these other rooms and events from, you know, around the country. And so I had this very lucky experience, which was that I got to be in a room full of a lot of different kinds of kids, figuring out what it was that they were passionate about and mm-hmm. what they were concerned about and what kind of impact they wanted to have on the world. And what you become familiar with is the great variety of issues that are weighing on young people, right? Yeah. And one of those issues is the environment and the state of our relationship to the environment. And I think we all intuitively kind of know, whether it is when we're walking around or when we're sitting in traffic or when we're at a restaurant and we're watching things be cleared and thrown away, or when we see a big dump truck go by, mm-hmm. or when you drive by a big factory or a big smokestack, or you participate in almost anything, there is a general sense that we are not really in balance here.
There's a dissonance.
Yes, there's a dissonance. That's a great word for it. Yes, we feel that something is not quite right in our relationship to natural resource and to the earth. Mm-hmm. And so you talk a lot about that with young people, and it's becoming more and more common. And as we kind of take this type of anxiety out of our bedrooms, which is where we maybe feel it the most late at night, mm-hmm. Or when we wake up in the morning, or when we see these things, when we're able to kind of bring it into a space and make it real and let us talk about it, it can be very cathartic. It can be very therapeutic. It can be exciting to kind of figure out, okay, we now all agree there's a consensus here. We don't feel great about how some of this is going. What can we do about it? Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about climate change. You talk a lot about conservation in those spaces. And, you know, you talk a lot about a lot of things. I don't want to I don't want to say this was all we talked about, but it was something that always struck me, and mm-hmm. it was something that I always felt. So those conversations got really interesting, because you would gain some understanding, you'd do some research, you'd start to understand the problem, which is something that we all kind of understand. And then there would be a moment when, and this happened pretty much every year, where there would be a young person who would raise their hand, and maybe they would have a shake in their voice, and maybe there would be a tear in their eye, and they would say something like, I get all this. Mm. Well, why is it that nobody seems to be doing anything about it? Why aren't the adults doing anything about it?
Yeah.
And that was a really kind of pivotal moment for me as an adult, because it's kind of my responsibility in the room to not allow ourselves to kind of sink into this sense of despair or defeatism or fatalism about what's possible. It is now my job to make us feel empowered and to identify what it is that we can do. Mm. And what you learn when you dig into this issue is that composting the soil, the health of the ground that we walk on, the health of the dirt that we grow our food out of, that this is really one of the easiest and the most impactful things that you as an individual or we as a community can do. If we care about the future, if we care about combating climate change, if we care about building resilient local ecosystems that provide us a livable planet, we have to tend to the earth. We have to start with that foundation. And composting, making sure that we're taking care of our organic natural resource and ensuring it doesn't end up in a landfill, which is a dead end for nature's resources. I mean, imagine a planet that has a natural carbon cycle that mm-hmm. goes in circles over and over again, you know, since life began on this planet, and human beings show up and we break that cycle.
Yeah.
We decide resources are not going to go in a loop, that things are not going to live and die, be returned to the soil to produce resources for more life, but that things are going to live, die, be commodified, wasted, and then thrown into a landfill where those resources can't be used by anybody. That's a profound insult to life. And it is one that it is seeds that we will reap and are reaping now. Mm-hmm. And we have to get this right. Mm-hmm. If we're going to have a future we can be proud of, and a future that our children are going to enjoy even a fraction of the experience that we have today. So that in short is, or maybe not so short, is how
the perfect amount.
Is how I come to my enthusiasm for this. And I can talk about exactly how I end up connected to Coco and introduced to the company and all that, but that's spiritually how I end up to this understanding.
Well, thank you for sharing your spirit, your heart. Thank you for taking the invitation from those kids to step up, because we need people that are stepping up and taking action.
Thank you for recognizing it, and thank you for being a part of that too. I mean, how did you find your enthusiasm?
I will say I also was a child of the dirt.
Yes, nice. Dirty fingernails.
I was a child of the dirt. I was a child of the hedge outside that I spent hours in making my, you know, two-story bed on the top branch while my neighbor best friend was on the bottom branch in her bunk, you know. And I loved animals before I could talk.
Yeah.
And so my life has just always brought me there from my passion and my heart but also this deep misalignment if I'm not with that, if I'm not in that space. And feeling so profoundly grateful that I get to be here on this planet and share the earth with these creatures that, if you describe them, essentially are alien. You know, we write these fantasies about otherworldly creatures when there are giraffes.
Right. Totally.
And it has always felt like my mission to give back in the way that I can to this more than human community. Mm-hmm. And through that, I do believe give to the human community to be able to facilitate a remembrance, a coherence of our oneness in the cycle of life.
That's beautiful. I like that a lot.
Thank you.
Yeah, that the community is really one that's essentially shared. We're not separate from these things.
No, and you know, we have our neighbors and our work communities and our friendships. And in the backyard, I have a mob of squirrels every morning that peek in my window because I've not put out the peanuts yet. And I have chickadees and flocks of crows that are all contributing to this ecosystem, and even without their contribution, they are inherently worthy and inherently valued for their life force and their existence. And I wouldn't feel whole if I wasn't a conduit of that message or that state of being.
That's so nice.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. The people who are thinking about nature this way, I hope it's ballooning. And yeah. I think, you know, the Denver Audubon Society and the folks who are connecting to that space and Coco, as Coco continues to, you know, expand its reach, I think you're seeing an awakening happening in this space. I think it's really cool.
I do believe there's a shift happening in the collective towards that, the community with, again, other humans and other creatures.
Yeah.
And it's hopeful.
Yeah.
And we need hope right now.
We do. We sure do.
Yeah.
We got to have it.
Yeah. So what gives you hope?
Getting to do the work here gives me hope. I think realizing that things can change. Mm. I think that it's very easy to become overwhelmed by how much it feels like things have to change. Mm-hmm. And what I love about my work here at Coco is that we're just talking about changing the way we think about what we throw away and where we put it. Mm-hmm. And what gives me hope is that that one small shift, if we can do it together, collectively, can have a resounding impact. If what we're talking about is taking care of the dirt beneath our feet, not building some massive machine or planning for a future where we leave the planet, those are really, really tall orders. But shifting the way that our communities think about some of the really more basic things, it's just a shift in awareness and attention. And that anybody can do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just requires us all to be showing it to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it happen. You know, it happens at the, you know, presentation that we did for Denver Audubon. And it happens in a million small ways on a compost collection route or a food scrap route. Mm-hmm. You know? It happens when we do a compost giveaway for the community here in central Denver. And mm-hmm. people are coming and you're getting to tell that story. It happens in the back of the, you know, Uber that mm-hmm. I take, where someone asks me, well, you know, what do you do? And I say, I make earth for a living.
Mm.
And he says, what? And then you talk a little bit about it and you have somebody look up and go, I had no idea what dirt was made out of.
Mm-hmm.
That's an actual conversation I had with somebody. That's a beautiful thing to connect with somebody on. And having those opportunities gives me lots of hope. The fact that you can still, no matter how messed up the world is, you can still go outside and find a bird in the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
You can still find a, you know, a morning run. Mm-hmm. I try and get outside in the morning. And now it's the season where squirrels are burying nuts and stuff. So I'm like, I'm totally jazzed just running the park.
I know.
And seeing squirrels preparing for mm-hmm. winter and the small dramas that play out between mm-hmm. animals and people. I mean, I just think the whole experience of being alive here is such a kick.
Yeah.
I really do get a kick out of it. So
it really is.
Yeah.
Just being alive and being present in that is enough hope.
Yeah. This is a pretty, I mean, and I this isn't to take away from the really, you know, there's a lot going on today that Absolutely. Is horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that we not allow, we don't want things to, two things can be true at once, right?
Yes.
There can be a lot of work to do. There can be a lot of horrors in the world, but the ability that we have to kind of savor the small moments mm-hmm. is something that we all, you know, have to preserve and to keep us from despair, because there's nothing productive necessarily about despair.
No.
Yeah.
It's a valid human emotion, and it doesn't get us many places.
Yeah, you have to feel it.
You know?
You got to work through it, yeah. and you have to be able to move that way, you know? My mother had a mirror, and at the base of the mirror, it had this little piece of text on it. It was this kind of basic wooden mirror, and it had a little inscription at the bottom of it, and it said, "No emotion is permanent." And I always took a lot of comfort in that, even early on. Just to allow yourself to work through the challenging feelings and not punish yourself for them, and know that, you know, hope is around the corner.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the only constants in life is change.
Yes.
And I can't remember who said that quote, but that's something that is an anchor for me when I think our human brains can tend to ruminate and feel like this is going to be forever.
Yes.
And I think that can be extrapolated also to the state of the earth. So if we can acquaint ourselves with change and recognize that the earth, our relationship with it, has a capacity for change as well.
Yeah, that is really good. I think that's a really important thing to remember. The other thing that I do, that I try and remember to maintain my energy and my enthusiasm for the work that we're doing, is to know that anybody who will tell you that they know how things are going to turn out in the end, I think you should be a little skeptical of that.
Absolutely.
Right? Whether that is a beautiful future or a nightmare, even the fears that we have about how things are going to turn out, I don't think it makes much sense to dwell or to particularly suffer those imaginations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it can be a hubris that's parallel to what has gotten us in this situation that we're in.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's so important, the work that you're doing, because this awareness, this education, gives people the opportunity to redirect their energy.
Right.
Rather than directing it to the things that don't feel good about the world, we have the opportunity as sovereign beings that have the capacity for change to direct our energy towards what we want. And that world we want isn't possible if we don't embody it or take the responsibility of making it possible.
That's right. That's right. We sent out a newsletter two weeks ago, and we try and start with a quote.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote we started with was, "The future belongs to the optimists."
Mm-hmm.
You have to believe something is possible in order for it to be. It is the prerequisite. So. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Those small things, doing the small things, and letting those small things get bigger and bigger over time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's compost.
Yeah. It makes me think too of, you know, the world that we live in is so much built upon narrative. And right now it is saturated with so many narratives that are, you know, prescribed as truth. And I think that a pervasive and unfortunate belief, though not completely untrue, is that we only take from the earth.
Mm.
And yes, we do. We take, we extract. And also, why is it so important that we shift that narrative and even belief in ourselves that we also can give back?
Yeah, what does it mean for a person or anything to give back?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's really important that we think about it that way, because we have to be stewards of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
It is in our very urgent interest to be stewards. And I think the idea that giving back means that you have to lose something in order to do that. And I really, again, to come back to this idea over and over again, because I can't help it, this is just about making sure that when something is no longer useful to you personally, that you don't then feel justified in throwing that away or ensuring that the resources that went into that thing that you no longer need are suddenly no longer available to anybody else or anything else or any other, you know, living being.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, I think it's time that we dive into compost.
I love it. Let's go. I got to pile out.
Yeah. You know, maybe we dive into dirt too, from, you know, inspired by that cab driver. And there's no judgment for listeners here because the general public is not educated on dirt or compost. Yeah. So walk us through, what's dirt? How can we compost? What is composting?
Yeah, these are great questions. So, you know, sometimes feels like these terms can be interchanged. Mm-hmm. You know, dirt is kind of a colloquial term mm-hmm. for what we walk on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can break that down into different categories, right? You've got fertilizers, you've got mulch, you've got topsoil, mm-hmm. And you have compost, right? And compost is like a superfood smoothie mm-hmm. of dirt, right? It's
yum.
Yes. It's a nutrient dense material that is produced when you allow food scraps and carbon based materials like leaves and other yard debris. When you mix those carbons and nitrogens together with some moisture and some water, you're going to see a process unfold that's really kind of magical, which is this biological and chemical reaction that cooks that material, mm-hmm. right? So as that material breaks down, these are a lot of different feedstocks. These are different materials that are providing different nutrients. And as those materials mix, as they become homogenized, as a microbiome develops and as bacteria and fungi start to process those more complex nutrients into more basic nutrients, you create something that looks a lot like dirt. You would mm-hmm. probably describe it as dirt, but it's filled, it's jam-packed with nutrients and moisture and oxygen and all of the things that plants need and bacteria need to thrive. Mm-hmm. And that can then be laid in yards and parks and gardens. And that nutrient-dense compost, when you amend your soil or you amend your dirt, whichever word mm-hmm. you know, you'd like to use, when you put compost on the land, you have this resounding benefit that has this rippling impact on your immediate environment and then on the larger atmosphere and environment. But I almost need to go back and talk about what happens when you don't. One of the places we like to start when we talk about composting is just the process that organic material goes through, mm-hmm. right? When it breaks down. And that's something that nature has done for itself mm-hmm. forever. This is a process that just happens when animals die, when plants, you know, when fruits fall on the ground, when plants die. But what happens when you create a food system that has pulled a lot of those resources out? And forget about just the food system. We're also talking about paper products, cardboard, mm-hmm. all the things that we use organic material and we manufacture and process it into something that we use it in the human world. What happens when you take all that stuff out and then you put it into a plastic bag and then mm-hmm. you throw that plastic bag into a landfill? What you get is an environment that doesn't really allow for this process to occur in the mm-hmm. way that it needs to. And the byproduct that gets produced when food waste ends up in those environments is it produces methane. Mm. And methane, we know, is many, many, many more times as heat trapping as carbon dioxide. It is devastating to our atmosphere when it comes to trapping these greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. And so you have this big problem, right? Because we've created a food system that has our landfills filled with this material. You know, depending on who you ask in the studies you consult, you're looking at over 50% of the materials in our landfills are mm-hmm. compostable items. So when you have that amount of material rotting in all of our landfills, producing methane kind of endlessly in this infinity loop, you are seeing more greenhouse gases being emitted from these landfills than the airline industry. That was a story that was published by the Washington Post a few years ago. So when you're thinking about the impact on the climate, you know, just removing these organic materials from the landfill has the potential to have this massive reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. So before you've even gotten to putting the compost on the ground, you have produced this massive benefit.
Yeah.
And you've become an agent for, you know, fighting climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And for trying to steward a more livable atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can talk about the fun stuff, ooh, which is what happens after you've made compost and what that can do for mm-hmm. us and for our communities and for the planet. So compost is this magical thing. There's a concept called carbon sequestration, which your listeners can research and they should. Mm-hmm. We got to figure out a way to keep carbon out of the atmosphere and mm-hmm. to put it somewhere where it's useful to us, because carbon is a plentiful element, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what we do with all that carbon is really important. Now, if we put it into the soil, we can actually start to trap that carbon in the ground where it's mm-hmm. useful to mm-hmm. animals and plants and bacteria. And that microbiome is going to continue to process carbon in the atmosphere. And it's going to grow things that also process carbon in the atmosphere. And that is really the most effective carbon capture technology we have access to.
Mm-hmm.
So if we invested in composting and laying healthy living soil around, you know, tens of hundreds of thousands of millions of acres of land, we could transform our atmosphere and we could transform our earth. You know, it's one of the reasons why COCO is so invested in producing compost and then giving it away, giving mm-hmm. it to people to lay in their yards and their parks and their gardens, because we need to put this stuff in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you've also got this other benefit, which is that laying healthy soil helps produce healthy ecosystems.
Mm-hmm.
It dilutes and actually processes toxins in the mm-hmm. environment. It is going to produce drought resilience, right? We mm-hmm. live in a very arid place. Mm-hmm. And that means that moisture, when it falls in whatever form it falls, is going to evaporate very quickly unless it can soak into the ground. And compost, when you lay it, it's spongy. It's going to absorb moisture. So when the sun comes out, it's not all going to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're able to lay compost in our cities, in our green spaces, in our yards, you produce that type of drought resilience. So you, if you live in a, you know, in a city or a suburb, or you live in a place anywhere, and you decide, I'm going to lay compost, you're going to notice that you don't have to water your yard or your garden nearly as much. Some studies say half as often.
Mm.
Imagine if we had to use half as much water to grow the food we eat.
Yeah.
These are just no-brainers and things that feel... things that get me really jazzed to talk about and really, really proud to get to work every day to bring as much of this out as possible.
Yeah. Thank you. And it feels easeful. It feels accessible. And I think something that stood out to me is it goes back to the word empowerment that you expressed earlier, where often climate change, climate crisis can seem like this abyssal, intangible thing that we are powerless to, when here is an opportunity to make a difference in a simple way and to be an inspired advocate for the planet.
Totally. That's exactly right. Going to the waste bin can either be a moment of guilt, a moment of kind of like dismissal, like maybe you're trying not to think about what you're throwing away. Maybe you don't. Maybe the feeling is just totally kind of agnostic. You go to the trash can because that's where you go.
Mm-hmm.
But it can become a moment where you're very proud of yourself.
Yeah.
It can become a moment where you feel like you're a part of the solution. I mean, I get a kick every time I use my compost bin, and it still happens every time. Mm-hmm. I'm like, another banana peel not going to the landfill, you know, another bit of leftovers that's going to have another shot at participating in life. And that all feels really good. And the more I want to stack as many of those feelings as I can on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. If we all can do that, I think we can see things really transform, and composting is a nice way to speckle that feeling into your life.
And what a wonderful opportunity to support, like you said, the foundation of life. And, you know, for the bird lovers that are here, that soil, it feeds the plants, which feeds the birds, which feeds the entire food web.
Totally.
And so it is an action from our home, from wherever we are, we can do And I saw on your website a quote that I liked that said, we complete the loop. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it also gives people the opportunity to re-enter the cycle we've been extricated from.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Yeah. If you feel alienated, if you mm-hmm. feel isolated, there's a lot of reasons for that.
And yeah.
part of it is that we've removed ourselves from that cycle. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. that's really poignant to frame it that way. Mm-hmm. I like that a lot.
Thanks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what are your insights on how can people get started on their composting journey?
There are lots of ways to compost. And if you can do it close by, mm-hmm. you should do it close by. You should do it, you know, in your yard. Now, that's challenging mm-hmm. because, you know, not everybody wants to throw everything that they produce in their backyard. Depending on where you live, you may not have a backyard. You may live in an apartment.
Absolutely.
Right. Or you may live in a place that has animals, or you may not be able to afford big kind of equipment that might help secure it and not have it attract pests. You know, I want to encourage as many people as possible to play around back there if you've got the interest, because we can talk a little bit about how you can do that. Doesn't need to be super complicated, but you can come up with lots of ways, because there's lots of people out here who want to help you do it. Mm-hmm. And Compost Colorado is one of those, right? So just to talk a little bit about what we do.
Absolutely.
And how we kind of help our community and our members live in better balance is, you know, if you partner with Compost Colorado to get your organic material out of the landfill, it means that you're able to get your bones out, get your meat out, get your wilted veggies out, get your compostable paper products like tissue and cardboard and pizza boxes, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. You have to start to identify, okay, what are the things and what are the ways that I can avoid contaminating this material mm-hmm. or making sure that I don't put anything in it that I don't, that I wouldn't want in my garden,
yeah.
those kinds of things. And, you know, Coco is here to help that. You certainly could peruse our website. That's helpful. I don't want to turn this into a pitch necessarily, but
pitch it.
Yeah, we can pitch it. We can totally pitch it. I mean, yeah, Compost Colorado helps its members to compost through a lot of different ways. We have a drop-off membership. We got drop-off bins all over the metro mm-hmm. area. You can find a list of them on our website. And if you sign up for a membership, you know, about 5 gallons a week is what we anticipate from you. That's usually what most households produce. And you can go find one of these bins. You can collect your organic material in any number of bins. If you'd like, you know, to get one, Coco will make that happen for you. And you find one of these bins once a week, you deposit your organic material in that bin. We're going to go ahead and take care of the processing of that material, make sure it gets turned back into earth. And then in the springtime, you're going to get a soil dividend from Compost Colorado, and you'll be able to use that compost in your yard or in your garden. Mm-hmm. And we also offer more compost. I mean, we are here to give it to you. Mm-hmm. And we're here to make sure you have as much of it as you can handle. And then we also have a really cool curbside service, mm-hmm. which is really the full service, right? That's our sustainability service.
Okay.
So that is going to be not just your 5 gallons a week. So if you sign up for a curbside membership, you're going to get a 5 gallon bucket from us. You're going to fill that bucket up. Once a week, one of our reps are going to come by your home in one of our Sprinter vans. We're not going to drive a big dump truck there because mm-hmm. we want to avoid, that big diesel machine, which we think there are better ways to manage organic. So we're going to come in a Sprinter van, and we're going to deposit that organic material. We're going to make sure there's no contaminants in it. We're going to take pictures of anything we find that we think is probably not good to put into the compost bin. And then we're going to send that picture to you so that you know better for next week. And that's part of the education piece. And we'll also take care of a bag of yard waste a week at no cost. If you've got more yard waste, we can absolutely take care of that. We have member events that deal with Christmas trees and pumpkins mm-hmm. and any organic material that we produce as we interact with this, you know, wonderful world. We are going to have something that helps you manage it.
Yeah.
And that's how you can get started composting. I mean, that's the easiest way to do it because mm-hmm. we'll help you. And yeah. You also have all these other great opportunities to live your values and work your values. If there's anybody who's listening that has an office space or a restaurant or an organization that cares about this, our service is also for them.
Wow. I really admire you and Coco's intentionality at every level. Everything you do is so intentional.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, we've learned a lot. And, you know, you see the people walking around this facility. It's because we care about this. Mm-hmm. We are energized by this. Mm-hmm. This feeling that whatever enthusiasm you may be feeling from me, it does rocket you up in the morning to get to work in this space. And our members are psyched about it, too. So it's a great way to kind of meet some other folks that are like-minded. We do events and happy hours and all that kind of stuff. We're just here to celebrate the future that we are manifesting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we know that, again, if we're going to have a world that we're proud of in 100 years, a world that we would like to live in, we think that this is a problem we will have solved. And Coco wants to be a big part of solving the problem.
I love that conviction. It's really inspiring and it's very needed.
Thank you.
And I think that, you know, among so many things that we've talked about, the importance of compost, I think that also it can offer such a balm, a salve for individuals as an action they can take, an accessible action. So for that climate anxiety, for that ecological grief, it can be an emotional support system too.
Totally. Absolutely. I think that's a big part of folks that work here feel that way. Mm-hmm. And absolutely. Mm-hmm. You want to feel a part. I mean, that anxiety is about feeling helpless.
Exactly.
It's about feeling like there's nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have to create more opportunities for us to feel like we're doing what we need to do and feeling like we're making a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing like driving a food scrap collection route and picking up a bucket and putting it in a place that you know is going to then become something valuable. We just did an event at the City Park Farmers Market, right? So we do the composting for them. And this past week, we actually brought back this rich, dark, beautiful soil. And to bring that back to the farmers market and have people put their hands in it, and smell it and take it with them, and for us to say, hey, you know, this is, you helped make this with the items that you made sure got in the right bin. You could see people's eyes light up and it was a really cool experience. And, you know, that's how things change. That's how we do it. You know, it's about the small things. It's about reducing the amount of plastic that we're using. It's about making sure that things that can break down do have the chance to break down and become life again. That's the cycle I want to work on, you know, the things that people throw away. How do we keep it going?
Make it beautiful, just like the crow.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. Making use of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd love to know on a little bit of a personal level. I liked your description when you said somebody asked what you do for work and you said you make earth.
Yeah.
What has that experience been like of having your hands in the soil, mingling with the earth? How has it enhanced and transformed your life?
That's a great question. I really love the feeling of being in the ground. I think it's led me to be less afraid of things. It's a good reminder that there are things dirtier than dirt. And that dirt is actually something that can really be a healthy thing to interact with. Yeah, the sensation of holding it, touching it, smelling it. Yeah, your senses, I think, really do light up over time. Starts to identify that stuff as being quite good. And it helps make you feel connected and less afraid. I mean, and it, I think I should also, it's really nice and kind of romantic to talk about hands in the dirt. But it's also, you know, we spend a lot of time dealing with food scraps and, you know, stuff that's like, you know, leaking and maybe rotting and there's mold or whatever, right? And to realize that that stuff is not horrible to interact with either. I mean, it's obviously you want to
It's not your ideal but
you are more resilient as a creature.
Yeah.
And that you don't have to be so afraid, mm-hmm. right?
And so fragile.
Yeah, mm-hmm. right. It's like we spend so much time and it is important to be clean, and you should mm-hmm. make sure that like you are taking care of, you know, your spaces and all this.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you don't have to bleach your life away.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to drench everything in your home or in your wherever you're yeah. interacting with in something that is just there to eradicate anything that might be living.
Yeah.
Bacteria, fungi, mm-hmm. these are really important life forms. Mm-hmm. And you have to be discerning,
of course,
when you're considering which ones are dangerous and which ones aren't. And it's important that we're not afraid of all things that are
yeah.
living.
Yeah. Well, and I think that fear has contributed to the separation we've built between us and nature.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, and you know, the innovation of like washing hands before conducting surgery mm-hmm. and making sure that you are, you know, hygiene. I mean, obviously.
Of course, it's contextual.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It's not to say that like when you came in and I just come in from like washing yeah. cups that I didn't like go, I am going to go and yeah. like wash my hands and face.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, we don't have to be so afraid. Yeah.
I agree. It's another one of those experiences, like a bird flying overhead, that makes me feel grateful for feeling alive, that I get to experience the sensation of mud between my toes.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yes. No, you are in good company.
Yes.
Yeah.
Every morning I go out, I mean, to the best of my ability, as many mornings as possible.
Right.
And I stand in the backyard and I get my morning sun and I take off my shoes and socks and put it in the cold mud and grass, and just to start my day founded upon the foundation of the earth.
I love it.
And it's just, it's wonderful. It reminds me that I get to be a body. I get to be a body.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Very nice.
And that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, this has been wonderful.
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. I think we could keep talking forever, yeah. but I think this has been lovely. And I just want to offer the opportunity, if there's anything you feel still wants or needs to be said from your heart, your mind.
No, I think we've touched on so much. I feel very, very like fulfilled and satisfied by this conversation. Yeah. Thank you for, you know, being such a wonderful host mm-hmm. and for your curiosity about this and your energy and your stewardship with Denver Audubon. I really think that we are kindred people and kindred organizations, and you know, I feel energized by the experience, and I hope I get to meet more of your members and more of your listeners. Yeah. And just want to encourage folks to feel excited about the future, feel optimistic mm-hmm. about the systems and the transformations that we're going to be a part of. It's going to be great.
Yeah. And thank you for being a conduit of that, you know.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I can say every time I've spoken with you, I leave feeling excited and empowered and enthusiastic.
That is so. Yeah, that is the nicest thing. I'm very, very pleased about that. Yeah, and good. Right back at you.
Thank you. Well, one last thing, though. Where can people find more information about you? Website, all those things.
Totally, yeah. Compost-colorado.com. You can Google Compost Colorado. We should come up pretty quick. And you certainly can follow us on our Instagram is probably our most active social media. That's mm-hmm. Compost Colorado. And you can sign up for a newsletter on our website if you can find it there. It's not that hard. It'll be at the bottom. The sign-up link is right there, and you'll have a chance to hear a little bit more about Denver's first compost processing facility, where we are making this earth right here in central Denver at the National Western Center and some of our other partners. So there's lots of ways of tapping in. And you can find much more information, website, Instagram. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants a conversation about this or wants a presentation on this, if you have a church or a club or a business, we will have these presentations wherever you need them. And you can find me, please reach out via email, noah@compost-colorado.com.
Cool. Yeah. Oh, amazing. Well, thank you, Noah, once again. Thanks, Lori. And thank you to all our listeners, whenever and wherever you're tuning in from. I hope that this left you feeling as inspired as it left me. And until next time.
And there you have it. This has been The Curious Bird. Thank you to our guests, our editor, Joe Escanos, and to you, our audience, for your time, curiosity, and openness. If you'd like to see these conversations continue, we would greatly appreciate your consideration in donating to our nonprofit, which you can do at the link in the episode information. Your generosity helps keep the conversations and our work flowing. To the bird lovers, the bird curious, the heart-centered, and any and every listener, until next time, when we meet again to build bridges, heal from separation, remember interconnectedness, and hear from the real inspired voices that are creating change in service to coexistence.